Computer, initialize holosuite.
Absolutely. And before we get started, there are a couple of little housekeeping things I want to address. By now, everyone should know that pretty much the only place that you can find Star Trek shows of any kind will be Paramount Plus. They've all officially been pulled from Hulu and Amazon Prime. Netflix still has The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. However, that's not slated to be for too much longer. There's been talk that it will be gone from that platform by February. So you might as well go ahead now and get your subscription to Paramount Plus. It is cheap. It has all the Star Trek shows plus all the new ones. And there are some new ones that are getting ready to come out here in March as well. So a lot of new Trek you can watch, and all your old Trek you can watch at Paramount Plus.
So Barry, are you telling me that because I'm a Netflix subscriber, I'm going to have to try and binge 6 more seasons in 1 month?
Yes. Yes. If you're just adamant about not getting Paramount Plus, that's exactly what you're going to have to do. But again, the Paramount subscription is pretty cheap. Like, I believe that right now it's like $6 or $7 versus Netflix, which is $15 right now.
About right. Yeah.
I know that I've been actually considering giving up Netflix because I think really the only reason why I was even had it for so long was because Star Trek was on it and because it was commercial free, but now it's just like, it doesn't even matter if I can't watch the one thing that I was looking for. So, yeah, I might not be a Netflix subscriber too much longer.
Oh, well, they're lost.
It really is their loss. It's so sad because, I mean, I think I watched a lot of their other programs, but it was always Star Trek that kept me going back to using Netflix every time.
Yeah.
So,
well, when Stranger Things season 4 finally.
Yeah, I'll figure out a way to. I'll figure out a way to do like maybe a trial, a trial subscription, 30-day trial, and I'll watch it. That's it. That's what everybody will go back to. I mean, that's what they all do. You know, sign up, you get a month free or whatever,
and just remind yourself, 29 days in to cancel that before day 30 yet. But then, they got you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I can do that. Before we get into the actual episode. How are you liking 2022 so far?
So far, so good. Last year here in Texas, we got that cold snap in February, so part of me is hoping that doesn't happen again. I was one of the few lucky people that still had power. We were near a fire station, so we were thinking that might have been why they kept the fire station powered and we were on the same, power line or whatever. I don't know if that was true or not, but we did end up hosting my parents and my niece for 3 days. They lost power at my parents' house. Meanwhile, my sister-in-law was in the middle of having contractions. She was about to give birth to their second child, which is why my niece was with us. But fortunately, that all went smoothly, all went well. Got two nieces now. I don't imagine we'll have to babysit this year if something happened. But so far so good. How about you?
Just about the same. Enjoyed New Year's, obviously. We did have a couple of cold days immediately following New Year's and everything else, but obviously nothing froze. So I'm really hoping that February is much better than what we had last year, of course. But as for us during that whole snowstorm and everything else, I mean, we were fine here. We still had power, and we were one of the few that still had power and water. So I ended up helping some neighbors and stuff for a little bit. But other than that, we were just fine.
Yeah.
So if something does happen, I'm hoping we weather it the same way.
Yeah,
stuck at all. But yeah, fingers crossed.
I'm still waiting on my bike, man. Still waiting on my bike. Oh, well.
Well, I mean, we'll obviously keep everybody updated. Hopefully you get your bike soon. And hopefully the weather will be nice enough that you can actually ride it when you get it.
Yeah.
That'd be funny if it arrives. It's like, yeah, but we've got 32 feet of snow. So you're going. You're going.
Yeah.
But, all that aside, tonight we are talking about Duet. A great season one episode, which just kind of falls in line with everything else that Deep Space Nine has been doing so far and giving us a really stellar first season. I don't think that we've had, I've said that before, that many shows kind of flounder a bit in the first season, but right. Deep Space Nine has really kind of, on several occasions, given us pretty strong stories.
Yes.
So I definitely feel like this is one of them.
Yeah, I definitely feel like this episode falls in line with that. Kira is one of our best characters simply because she has the emotional stakes. But I'm jumping ahead. Let's get a recap. You want to
Yeah. So, recap the episode, and I promise to be brief this time. This one starts with Kira and Dax in Ops. They're talking about their various childhoods, things they used to experience when they receive an incoming hail from a Kobirian freighter. Kobirian freighter is transporting various goods, whatever else, but they're dropping off a passenger who has some medical needs. He's been diagnosed with a disease called Kalanora. And so because he has Kalanora, he's needing treatment, which immediately basically makes Kira's spider sense go off. And she's just like, whoever this guy is, he might be one of these revered former prisoners of a infamous Cardassian labor camp called Gallatin. So she convinces Sisko to let her go down and meet the survivor. She goes down to the sick bay and discovers that the person that's there isn't a Bajoran, as she was expecting, but it's a Cardassian, which means that if this person was at Galatep and contracted this disease, they were one of the slave masters, overseers.
Yeah.
So now she's like, this guy's a war criminal. I want him arrested. She calls Odo. Odo comes over, and the guy pretty much denies knowing anything about it. But Odo arrests him anyway because it's Kira, and of course he's going to listen to her. He's going to do whatever she wants. So they arrest him, throw him into the brig. And in the break, he's just basically like, I don't have whatever it is she's talking about. She's a crazy fanatical Bajoran. I don't know what she's talking about. Sisko gets a little bit worried because he's like, why did we just throw this man in jail? He came on a Federation ship. He hasn't done anything wrong. You can't just arrest people whenever you want to, Kira, you know. Right. So Kira then kind of lays it out for him about what Galatep was all about. It was the worst labor camp ever. She and her resistance cell, the Shakar resistance cell, liberated that camp 12 years ago. But before they could, there was some kind of accident at the labor camp, which anybody who was there contracted that disease, Kalanora.
Right.
Sisko goes down to the brig to talk to the guy. The guy's like, I don't have that. I have something else. A similar disease that uses even the same medicine, he says. And so then, of course, they have to go back through. They talk to Bashir. They verify he does not have Potrick syndrome. That was the other disease. He does not have Potrick syndrome. He does indeed have Kalanora, which means the only way he could have contracted it was if he was at Galatep. So he must have been there. So now they're trying to determine why he would have lied and who he really is. He's saying that he is a Cardassian named Aemon Maritza.
That's right.
Yeah. And they continue to do an investigation of him, find out Aemon Maritza is a legit Cardassian person. He was a filing clerk who worked at the Galatep prison, but he basically is claiming that, yes, he worked there, but he didn't really do anything. He just filed things. He just did whatever everybody else told him.
Right.
And
he's really good at it.
Yeah, really good filer. Even to the point where, even when he left, he went to another planet where he taught filing. Most boring job ever. I just can't imagine. So anyway, they have these little back and forth with Kira trying to interrogate him to get him to admit to more of what he actually did versus what he says that he did. At least it's a very great scene between the two of them. Ultimately, before they discover that they begin to suspect he's not who he says he is.
Right.
Odo starts to make some inquiries. He ends up contacting Golden Cog. Golden Cog's like, this guy must be who he says he is at first. But then they get a picture from the Bajoran intelligence.
Right.
Bajoran intelligence shows them who Aemon Morensis, what he should look like. Doesn't match the guy that they've got in the holding cell. They do some computer imaging magic, and they find the other image of the other Cardassian in the picture, and it's none other than the leader of the prison camp, whose name was Guldar Heald.
That's right.
Now it's like, oh wait, so he's gone beyond being a simple filing clerk. This guy is the Butcher of Galateth. That's what they kept calling him. He was the man in charge. He was doing the most horrific things to these Bajorans when they were under his subjugation. So now Kira is all hot and bothered and ready to really just nail this guy for being this massive war criminal.
Right.
Odo continues his investigation. Again, there's the contact with Gul Dukat. Gul Dukat's like, no, Guldar Heald is dead.
Right.
And so this leads Odo to continue to investigate. He ends up confronting Kira, and Kira talks about how she was really upset with the guy because he was making fun of her and her resistance cell. This tips Odo off. He's like, you probably shouldn't tell him stuff about you. She's like, oh, I didn't tell him. He brought it up. He's like, well, how would he know that you were in the Shakaar resistance cell?
Right.
And so this leads them down the path to ultimately realizing that someone has been quietly inquiring information about Major Kira.
Right.
And that they've gathered up enough intel to come and put on the show for them, basically.
Right.
And as the story starts to unravel, Kira begins to realize he really is Aemon Morensis.
Yep.
He's had himself surgically altered to look like Guldar Heald, and he's doing it because he believes that the Cardassian people need to be held accountable for all of their crimes against the Bajoran people, and the only way to do that is for people like Guldar Heald to be brought to justice. But since Dar Heald is dead, this is his way of kind of pushing all of their atrocities back into the spotlight, getting the recognition they need in order for the Cardassian people to atone.
Right.
They ultimately realize that, though misguided, it is kind of a noble thing that Aemon Morensis is attempting to do, but they don't go through with it, of course, because he's not really Guldar Heald.
Right.
They decide to let him go after he has several emotional breakdowns, and then they finally convince him, Kira finally convinces him that, you know, again, what he was doing was misguided but noble. He's a good man. He should go on living his life. And as they attempt to escort him out of the station, he is unfortunately stabbed by another Bajoran who had just a blind hatred for Cardassians. It didn't even matter.
Yep.
He just killed him because he was a Cardassian.
Yep.
And that's even what he says. You know, why did you do it? Kira asked him, why did you do it? He was not Guldar Heald. And he's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's like, yes, it does. And that's it. That's pretty much how the episode ends.
Yeah.
So
I just have to say, everyone, that was from memory. Perry was not using notes. That was purely from memory. All those names, which I can't remember the names all the time. I had my notes pulled up so I could make sure, but that was all from memory. So I've said it before, I'll say it again. You have a memory like a steel trap, friend.
Well, thank you very much. I will say that I guess you can consider them cheats in the memory because the names stand out so significantly. Like, I've always thought Guldar Heald was just a cool name.
Yeah.
I don't even know how else to explain it. And then the diseases, Potrick syndrome, Kalanora, I don't know, they stick with me.
Yeah.
So when I knew we were talking about this episode, I was like, okay, this is going to be great. Like, so I like these, you know?
Yeah.
I like the back and forth of the episode. Like, it's the constant reversal. Like, we think he's a bad guy, then we're not kind of sure. Right.
Yeah.
Kira's the antagonist, but then suddenly she's not. Then she is again, then she's not. Like, I loved all of that interplay here.
And I believe it was the last episode. Yeah, it was the last episode where Kira was our villain, kind of, with Sisko. She was the one who was like, we're going to take this station back from the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
When they have these kind of false personalities put upon them by those energy orb things. So yeah, this one follows up pretty well on that episode, because here's Kira once again butting up against Sisko. She's like, hey, the Bajoran government has a legitimate interest in finding war criminals. I'm pretty sure that's the guy. You need to give me this. Like, she tells him when he sits down, and
he
goes to her and says, Odo is going to want to do the investigation,
because
I feel like he can be more neutral about it. And she's like, me and the Bajoran people need this.
Right.
She makes an emotional plea to him. I personally think in that moment he should have stuck to his gun and just been like, I get it, I totally get it, but the whole reason that the Federation is here is to help facilitate a neutral
relationship, you know, get the relationship with you and the Cardassians working again. But in that moment, he's like, okay, Kira, go for it, but I'm watching you the whole time.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. I can see your point on that. Like, I've gone back and forth on that. Because, again, as I knew this episode was coming up, I was kind of thinking about it. And initially, I thought, too, that Sisko probably should have stuck to his guns a bit and been like, no, we're going to let a third party handle this, somebody that's not really attached.
Right.
But and in the end, though, I kind of understand it from Kira's perspective.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
I mean, she is, while she's obviously connected and affected by this because she was one of the liberators of the labor camp, but, I mean, she's representing her entire civilization.
True. Very true.
And Sisko is in a unique position to present a third party that we would never have. Like, think about it. Even now, if we were to find, like, a war criminal somewhere, I mean, obviously, they're human. There is no third party for us to reach out to, you know? So, I think, like, to me, that's why it makes sense that he's still allowed Kira to do it. I think maybe they should have picked maybe a different Bajoran, perhaps somebody who wasn't in the Shakar Resistance cell, so they weren't there.
Right.
Maybe that would have been a little bit better.
Right.
But I understand the desire to have someone who was affected by it from that civilization be represented.
Right.
That makes it all the more meaningful for them to have this conviction go through.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Now, this episode, I think, definitely makes it pretty clear that, well, the best analogy of what's going on is World War II, the Holocaust, the Jews being in concentration camps. The idea of someone who had been part of the resistance and going in and, you know, they had liberated a camp and all the horror that went on there, your immediate, at least for me, I'm pretty sure everyone would agree, but the immediate thoughts are of these concentration camps and the horrors that happened there. And we need to hold people accountable. And this episode gets really dark at times when the guy who claims to be Goldar Heel, he starts bragging about all the things they did. Which is funny because he starts off, again, part of the twist, he's like, the first twist, he's like, oh no, that was all just a bunch of propaganda we put out to scare the Bajorans. We didn't want them to, rebel.
Right.
We wanted them to be put down and miserable. And then when he says, no, actually, I am Goldar Heel, he says, oh no, I did all those things and I loved it. I was getting rid of the scum of the Bajorans. Like, he enjoys the whole thing and he's like just reveling in his evilness. Totally goading Kira.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then when he turns around at the end of the episode, it turns out that no, it's not that he enjoyed it. This man is actually guilty for not exactly his participation per se. He doesn't say he did anything himself. But his being there, his having witnessed what happened,
right.
That is what gets to him a lot and feels that the Cardassians need to be held accountable for what happens. So.
Right. To me, it was almost like a societal acceptance of the Bajoran occupation and the brutalities that were going on. You know,
right.
Like when he talks about, you know, this being more part of like the war machine propaganda, we were feeding out misinformation to keep the Bajorans demoralized and so forth, that none of these atrocities really happened. We were just making this stuff up.
Right.
You know, I thought about that as that could also go both ways, not just with the Bajoran people, but also with Cardassians. Because how many, like, from what we know of Cardassians anyway, we know they do have a large military, but, you know, they're not a totally militaristic race.
Right.
So how much of that would have also been propaganda they put towards their own civilians to kind of, one, keep them in line, and also keep them supporting the military movement, right?
Right.
If you feel like your military is right and making those correct decisions, then you're probably not going to object to those things that they're doing, you
right.
know? So I wonder if there was an element of that in there. I mean, and that would be something that we would also see kind of in our own societies. How many militaries throughout forever have had propaganda machines to make us or make their society, their civilians think that what they're doing is correct. You know, they believe in the inferiority of whoever it is they're attacking. So I feel like that was kind of where they could have alluded to. That's what just what I remember picking up on when I watched that part. But of course, you just get so much from Maritza, Darheel, whatever you want to call him, the man loves to monologue. He's got some great moments where is just going for it, man. Yeah. It's like, y'all just really just sat back and let this man talk, didn't you? Because he just never shuts up after a while, you know?
Well, that's what's kind of funny, too, about this guy, you know, doing these surgical operations to himself. Like, he commits to this part he plays of being the villain Dar-Heel. He is committed to this role. I mean, he's done the work. He's, you know, done the research, as we talked about. He got surgical alterations to look like the man himself. But yeah, it's quite an interesting kind of ploy that someone would go through to make something happen. But it really nails home a great episode. Because again, Kira is the one who has dealt with Bajoran occupation. In fact, as I think about it, it's like we need more Bajoran characters almost just to give someone else a chance to enjoy all these great storylines.
Right. And considering that our space station is in Bajoran space and we're only, from what we've been told anyway, 3 hours from the planet, from Bajor.
Right.
I mean, it's odd that there aren't more of right. them. But yeah. I guess, you know, in-universe, there could be any number of reasons for that. But I still feel like there should be, you're right, we should see more Bajorans in the more militaristic aspects of Deep Space Nine.
Right.
We really don't see many of them.
Yeah. I know that this wouldn't make sense because the Trill are their own race, but if what had happened there is like part of becoming a part of the Federation is the Trill symbiote chose as a new host a Bajoran, like then Dax being like a Bajoran would have been interesting. Like again, I feel like in season one her character has been just kind of there.
Well, as we've said, you know, it is season one. There's a lot that they're trying to give us that we have to unpack, you know, and then like you know. I know that it gets better as seasons go on, so we just get there. But you're absolutely right. Like there's so much that we don't see from both the Bajorans as a whole, Dax, just kind of in general. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much that we haven't really gotten into yet.
Right.
So I guess we just kind of have to sit back and wait because always wanting to be, you know, like give me all of it would spoil everything.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So before we go into anything else, I did do a little bit of research, and I wanted to go over some like behind the scenes things for this episode.
Let's do it.
So a couple of like really cool things I think anyway that make this episode unique and interesting is that one, this is the first episode that we ever see in Star Trek that has no subplot. You know, typically they do those stories where there's like an A story and a B story.
You're right.
This one does not have that. It is all A all the time.
That's right.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
So this is their first attempt at doing that. What else? This episode had actually been pitched several different times and was rejected almost every time.
Really?
Yes. They don't really say why. There's like a couple of different things, like everything from they didn't like the original name of the episode to just writing issues and whatever else. So it just kept getting rejected. But then what ended up happening was it was towards the end of the season. They needed some more episodes to round out the season count, the episode count. And unfortunately, they were over budget. They had spent so much money on the season premiere, the pilot, and on the episode, The Storyteller, that when it came time to do these episodes, there was like nothing really left.
Yeah, no extra set.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically, they tasked the writers with coming up with a story that cost them $0 to film.
Right.
And so this was the episode that was kind of the script anyway that was rehashed over and over again, and it became this. And it is listed as one of the 10 most essential episodes of Star Trek to watch.
Oh, wow.
This is how important this episode is, how famous it is. And to me, that's just like amazing. Like an episode that they didn't want, that got reworked multiple to death. Times. Right. Yeah. And ultimately came about because they had no money.
Right.
We get this great episode from. And I mean, it's a fantastic episode.
Yeah, yeah. Necessity is the mother of invention. You can also say it's also the right way to get good storytelling.
Right. And what else did I have here? Oh, so like this episode is also, again, it deals with a lot of different role reversals. The constant back and forth between Kira and Dar-Heel as to who's kind of, I guess, the antagonist, not just the villain, but who's the antagonist.
Right.
Happens multiple times. That's kind of the first time that Star Trek had ever really done that as well. So, and then there's one other thing which I kind of hesitated to mention, but anyway, because it's a mild spoiler, if anything. At the very beginning of the episode, the ship that drops off Maritza Darhio is the Kobirian freighter Rakmunis. We see that exact same ship, that exact same alien, pop up a couple of different times.
Okay.
And they use the same still, the same graphic, every time. And no one seems to really notice or care to reshoot it for anything. So in a couple of seasons from now, we will see the Rakmunis again. So that comes out.
So budget saving happens into the future.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, even in the future, they just, you know, there's only one ship running around out there.
Gotcha.
And also, a little deep dive on the guy who played Aemon Maritza or Goldar Hill. His name was Harris Yulin, and he is actually a pretty famous actor. He's been in a lot of different shows and movies and everything else. Some of the most famous things we would know him from would be like Clear and Present Danger with Harrison Ford. He was in Ghostbusters 2. He was the judge in that movie when the ghost of the Scolari brothers comes up.
Right.
He's the judge there. And then probably his most famous role, he was in Scarface. He's the crooked cop in Scarface who tries to hold Tony Montoya to the fire. So, yeah. So he's been around. He's still active. He still listed as an active actor today. He's like 84 years old. Still apparently going strong.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
So, in an episode with so many great performances, I'm going to ask you a little bit different of my favorite question of the week.
Okay.
What was your favorite scene in this one?
You know, I would have to put it either as the one where Kira says what the atrocities were on this labor camp. I think she's in
Galatep.
There with,
and she's Galatep. With Sisko.
And Bashir. I think she's with Bashir because Bashir is in the midst of confirming that he has. And it's a dark moment. It's also pretty powerful because, like, I mean, again, going back to the whole analogy of the Holocaust, she says that women were raped and men were beaten beyond recognition and people were buried alive. So later on, I would say, like, the second part of that being the best scene is when the guy is pretending to be Goldar Neil and he's, like, bragging about it. And he's like, yeah, I did all these terrible, horrible things and I was proud of it. I told my men to go out and kill people because they felt clean after they did it. Like
that, you just stole my best scene.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess we're in agreement.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, it's such a. I mean, if you aren't in that moment, just like, I mean, that's the whole point, right? The whole point is to be like, this guy is totally evil. Like,
yeah.
He's not
a psychopath.
There's no redemptive quality to him, and then to find out that he was like doing all this, he was calling down the thunder and lightning from God on him. Sense that he was calling down judgment on himself as a way to atone for his being there, to atone for the Cardassians by calling for justice on the situation. Why do you love this scene so much?
Well, it's more the second part, like you said. Like Kira goes into great detail about the atrocities that were inflicted upon the people at Galatip, you know, and she just kind of lays it out. And we see the emotional toil it takes on her. She kind of, you know, loses it. She can't even finish talking, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, you flash forward and she's confronting Goldar Heel. And he goes into that very elaborate speech about how he would send his men out to kill Bajorans. It didn't even matter who. They'd just kill them and they'd come back with blood on their hands. And even though they had blood on their hands, they were clean. And he said, why do you think they are clean? Because they were clean. Like, just the way he says it has always creeped me out. So, like, he just, the conviction of the man that he has no problem with murdering masses of people.
Yeah, it's a great just, villain monologue.
Yeah. And, I mean, and you can just see, you know, from Kira's reaction, she's just visibly, physically disturbed by everything that he's telling her.
Yeah.
You know? And even when she tries to write him off, when she says, you know, you're a madman, he's just like, oh, no, don't. Here's what he says. Don't write me off so quickly. Like, I am not a madman. Like, he's fully aware and committed to what he did. And I love seeing that. Like, she calls him crazy, and he just, it almost makes him crazier.
Yes.
And he just totally, he looks the part. He looks so maniacal. Yes. And, I mean, the Cardassians were already set up to be our villains anyway. But, man, if they had gone more down that dark path, the Cardassians, you know, just kind of really, because what we see of Dukat We know he's evil, but he's so smug and self-serving.
And he's slimy.
Right. Yeah. You know, you just...
He's as reptilian as that makeup.
Yeah, but this guy comes in and he just blows all that away. And I'm just like, man, if they had made Dukat like him, this would have been a totally different show.
The one question you ask as you're watching that, and then you find out later he's not actually Doldar Heel, is like, was that actually how Doldar Heel was?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because
was he that kind of ruthless? Was he because that insane?
Yeah, because the only thing we really find out about Goldar Heel is that, you know, one, he's dead, and two, he was buried with honors.
Yes.
You know, so we don't know what really kind of person he was when he was...
As far as the Cardassians are concerned,
he was a hero. Yeah. You know? So, yeah. So, this could be... And then, clearly, we see at the end, Maritza is deeply affected. He's got PTSD like none other. And so, how much of this was his, you know, real remembrance of Darheel, or his... guilt overwhelming him from even being tangentially associated with Galatep, or what, you know? So, there was just a lot there that we didn't know, but it's like one of the few times I feel like the lack of background information actually heightens the story.
Because,
there's just no way we're going to know every single detail, but, man, they give us just enough to keep this character completely off balance for you to really enjoy.
Yeah.
You know? So, just, again, great scene. One thing, you know, it reminds me, every time we see Cardassians, they do this. They do this kind of pontificating, this monologuing.
Yeah, right.
Is this a character trait, do you think? Like, or are we just always dealing with the most narcissistic individuals ever who just can't shut up?
Well, I would say if we go back to the Next Generation episode where Picard is being tortured by that one Cardassian, and he explains the history of Cardassia and that the military was, like, they saved the people. I would say that on some level, it's certainly the military. The guys in the military, they have bought into the story of we are the saviors of Cardassia. So, yes, they are definitely going to monologue and defend. But we haven't yet met any just run-of-the-mill Cardassians other than, you know, this guy, Maritza. Yeah, this time.
So we've got him. Gold Dukat, which, I mean, I feel like Gold Dukat never shuts up. He just, he annoys me to no end. Every time I see him, I'm like, oh, I got 10 minutes, got to listen to this guy, you know. But even there was another Cardassian that we see early on. No, it was definitely Deep Space Nine, but it was like early.
The brother of Gold Dukat? Because there's the same actor who plays.
Mark Alamo, he plays Dukat, and then he plays Gol Merset, but that's in TNG, not in...
No, I thought the pilot in this episode, there's a character that shows up.
That's who I'm thinking of, but he's not Gol Dukat's brother.
Oh,
but
he's a different actor.
But we are thinking of the same Cardassian.
Right.
But he's the one
guy who ran the station.
Right.
Before,
Yeah. So that's who I was thinking of, but even him, he was just, like, really long-winded. So I'm wondering, like, if that's the character trait of Cardassians.
Maybe it's part of being in the military. You get trained in espionage, and part of that is, you know,
delay
tactics, but also turning things on your opponent. So the way you have a conversation, you put your opponent on their feet, on edge, and it'd be a fun question to ask. I would say that on one level, part of me is like, oh, you know, the Ferengi, they're greedy. That's their trait as a species. Sometimes giving a species a trait can be simplistic and, you know,
well, greed is probably,
So the idea that the Cardassians would have a trait as an alien race
to be so grandiose,
maybe that is their thing, but I would certainly say it's more fun as a writing, as a character thing, to give it to individual characters or even a group of individuals that, you know, relate to each other. But yeah, you're right, they love monologuing.
I mean, this seems like that's like their whole MO. I mean, and certainly Maritza does a great job here. Like, almost every scene is basically Kira asking him maybe two questions, and then he's got 15 minutes to go into those questions. Yeah. Least favorite scene, now that we've done the first.
This is a good, of course, different question. It's hard to say there's like a bad scene.
Right.
I would certainly say, I mean, I was going to go back to Dax, just kind of in this episode briefly at the beginning, and they're talking about their childhoods, and then at the moment I can't remember all that they said. Remind me, remember kind of what they talked about?
they were talking about things they got up to as children.
Right.
And so
Bakira asked Dax, is this the symbiote or is this the host?
That's right, because Dax starts talking about how she used to throw rocks.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, sorry, but you know what? From a human standpoint, little children who go around throwing rocks and breaking windows, yeah, they don't go on to be fine officers, yeah. All right? So, yeah, I mean, great point that...
curse on it.
Yeah. Great point that Kira makes to ask her which one of her
and
was
Dax
that was
doing
it.
Doesn't answer. She
doesn't answer.
That enigmatic smile and just...
She just kind of...
called over, so
yeah.
She doesn't answer.
But, yeah, I mean...
Actually, that's not a bad scene. It's a fun scene. It's just that Dax as a character has not been given the...
Right.
Full...
Well, I was going to say that, to me, there are no bad scenes in this one because they all play into the greater story arc. Like, the fact that they were, when we first see them, it's basically downtime in Oz, right? And then we see how that immediately is switched off when the mention of Kalanora happens, right? So, it was like we needed that kind of lull to get everything else going.
Right.
And also, because there is no B plot, we don't have a, like a, this is a great scene, this is a not so great,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, we from our main story.
Right. We don't have to worry about any of that because everything is so continuous.
Right.
Which, to me, is laying the groundwork for what makes Deep Space Nine such a great show, because they do things that continue to relate from episode to episode.
Right.
Like, we've watched Kira grow steadily.
Right.
You know, from that very antagonistic hothead person in the pilot. To now, I mean, she's still a very passionate officer, but she's also learned to kind of, like, temper herself a little bit.
Yes.
Now, in this, we do see that, at least initially, the whole, again, Kalanora, Galatep, it really set her off.
Right.
But with Sisko's guidance, she's able to, you know, rein that in fairly quickly
right. And
do this thing, which ultimately leads them into how they uncover that it's fake, that
yeah.
it's not real, you know?
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, part of the fun part of this episode is when Odo is doing his research and he contacts Dukat, and he's like, someone's trying to pull something on you, and that's when he's like, okay, I'll give you access to the files. But like, as you unravel the mystery, because like, I was watching the timestamps, I was going through like pausing it to like get food while I was watching, I was like, man, there's like 20 minutes in this episode. We found out that he's Goldar Eel, he's the villain, like what else could then we see this episode? And then like find out like there's more of a mystery going on, and you know, like the Cardassians don't want anything to come out about them, so the fact that Odo figures it out actually kind of backfires for, like, justice, in a sense, which is kind of ironic, because Odo, he's, like, the guy about justice, in a certain sense. He's the, or the girl, at least the one to go run down the criminals.
So you would say that it was a backfire for justice because they proved that he was not Goldar Eel?
Well, if the point that Maritza was trying to make is that the Cardassians should be held responsible for what happened, the fact that they reveal his identity as not Goldar Eel means that
his plan backfires.
Well,
yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah,
yeah.
That plan backfires. But also, if Maritza had effectively pulled off his scheme and justice was done,
and their sins laid bare, basically.
Right. If that had happened the way Maritza planned, then justice could have been served, quote unquote. But the fact of the truth is that, you know, you can't give justice. He's dead. Man's been gone for 6 years. He got buried with honors. As far as like history is concerned, there's nothing that can be done, which is
right. Part
of the tragedy of this episode. It's like, you know, there's nothing Kira could do, and she actually says this to Dax up on the promenade at one point. She's like, you know, actually Dax says it to her. Dax says, like, revenge or vengeance isn't going to bring back the people. It's not going to, I don't know exactly what the line is she said, but she basically says that vengeance isn't the answer. Because Kira's like, I'd love to like do something about this, but
and you also make a good point because, you know, in a way, Goldar Eel says the same thing to Kira, too.
Yes.
Because
he
says
yeah.
the dead will still be dead. I remember
right. Saying
that the dead will still be dead.
Right.
So it's just like, yeah, no matter what you do to him, no matter, you know, what you think, he's killed everybody. So, he, you know, he feels fine.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, his way of saying it is obviously way worse than the way that Dax is trying to frame it. But,
right. Yeah,
I mean, their points are the exact same.
Right.
It's interesting because, like you were saying, like, almost like a miscarriage of justice and said that Maritza's plan didn't go off, but at the same time, justice is still ultimately served because an innocent man was not punished for crimes he didn't commit.
Right.
So it's weird because it's like you get both. You
get
you do feel like, man, if we they should do this to the Cardassians. This needs to be brought to light. We don't need to let them bury this and cover it, however they're trying to spin it, misinformation, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But at the same time, we can't let an innocent man be put to death or suffer in any way for something that he didn't do.
Right.
So, which makes it all the more tragic that drunken Bajoran who...
Yeah.
He was in the holding cell when they brought Maritza in.
That's right. Yeah.
And so that's how he knew he was in there.
Right.
And then he basically... What, he's just loitering around on the promenade, and they walk by, and he just comes up and stabs him.
Right, blow him back, and
that's it. Which, I'm sorry, Oda, what are you doing for security? This guy's walking around with a knife and can just kill people. Like, you pride yourself on, cracking down on security.
I was thinking as the episode was ending, the camera's pulling away, and there's, a crowd of people standing around this dead body, and, no one's doing anything. It's just the final moment. But I was thinking, the more accurate representation of this scene would be mayhem. Someone's been murdered.
Someone has been stabbed.
And the security
right.
team should be, doing something. And, this is all kerfuffle. So I do think there was maybe that's the worst scene. They kind of dropped the ball right at the last second.
Yeah, they let down the veil there. The realism was completely lost here. Because, that guy should have been, tackled to the ground.
Right.
Alarm sounding maybe. Pandemonium. Someone screaming. Something. But... Yeah, it was the calmest murder I've ever seen.
Yeah, Kira lays him gently on the ground.
Right, she holds him and slowly, and then she's just like, "But it's not enough." I'm like, "No, shoot him."
Yes.
He just tase him something. He's standing there to do something else. So there was a lot lacking in that scene. So
I do want to say though that it reminds me of the end of the episode Progress where Kira burns down the Bajoran guy's house.
Mullabok.
Yeah, and she's like, "We're going." At the end of the episodes.
That's how it ends.
Yeah.
It ends with them beaming out. The place is on fire, like nothing. Great episode, sure.
This
but
one
I'm just
definitely
like,
isn't quite as good as Progress, but definitely is.
Oh, so you're going to say this one is not as good as Progress?
Oh, I definitely think Progress. I mean, I think Progress is the second best episode after the pilot, and I would say this one is maybe three. Because I think Progress really put it on Kira because she was in. Real bind in the sense that how do you there was no good answer there. And this one, she could have if Kira had assassinated / murdered this dude in his jail cell, you'd have been like, well, Kira destroyed her career, but at least the dude deserved it.
They would have found a way to make it okay.
Right, exactly.
And for that just point to Worf in TNG straight up murdered Duras, and everybody was just like, Klingons consider the matter closed, so I guess just go back to your station. Right.
This is definitely one of the best episodes of the season so far. And
I would say this one to me is better than Progress. I just really love the interplay that we got, and because I knew about the fact that this was a low budget episode,
right?
And so to me, that they were able to get so much from an episode where so little financially went into it,
right?
Which, I mean, do we really need it? Because, I mean, we already have the sets and everything else, so I guess we don't really need a lot in regards to special effects and everything. So I just love that we got these two actors who really, played off of each other very well.
Right.
And even though we don't see much of the other actors in this, we still get what we do get from them. I also appreciate it. Sisko trying to understand Kira's point. Sisko and Kira and, Kira coming to Sisko to try to plead with him to... let her, or just let a Bajoran do it, Odo, of course, just being Odo, and he's kind of, he's leading this investigation anyway, despite the fact they kind of make it like, oh, it's Kira who's going to lead it, but she's not leading anything. It's definitely Odo is doing the actual investigating, because he just can't stop. So I just even in those moments, we see these characters true to the natures that we have come to establish here, and I love seeing all that build into these very exceptional scenes between Kira and Golgar Heel, Ingram Moritz, or whatever, and continuing to see that play off.
Yeah.
So that to me was what makes the episode great. And I even said, when we did, Dramatis Personae, one of my favorite things that Trek ever does is when they just have the characters talking and interacting with each other. I don't need elaborate fight scenes. I don't need ships exploding. I don't need all that. I like seeing the characters as they wrestle with whatever the issue is.
Well, it's like what I said when we were talking about Progress, is that in that episode of Progress, we didn't need any of the sci-fi elements could have been removed from the episode of Progress, and it would have been a great episode. It could have just been a story as it was told, absent sci-fi, and it would be great. Same thing could have been said at this point.
Yeah.
All of the sci-fi elements could be removed, and it would still be a great story.
Yeah.
Both episodes. Let me do this way. They're the same coin, like, the opposite side of the same coin, in terms of how good an episode they are, and why. Kira is the coin, though. She's the reason this episode is great.
Yeah.
She's the character you're emotionally invested.
Well, and I like a villain. I always have liked a really, give me a really bad, gritty,
there's a reason terrible Joker is one of the most popular villains.
You know, and like again, that's what I said. Like if they had made Gold Dukat more like this guy, you know, in our first initial run in with him, the show would have been completely different.
Right.
If the Cardassians, you know, and you know if that was their whole thing, like you said, you know, we kind of generalize the Ferengi as being greedy. If we had seen the Cardassians characterized more as malicious, totally different show. So to see Maritza act this way is probably why it stands out to me as better than Progress. Because in Progress, it's like everything is tragic, but there's not really a bad guy in that episode.
Sure.
You know, like even if you want to try to say it's
Kira
the government.
A bad guy.
Well, but even then, even in the sense that she was, she was set up to be the bad guy in that episode, but she's not. She's trying to.
Well, I think that's why I like that one.
Right.
Because she's like kind of an anti-hero, but not.
Right.
Like she's in this weird spot.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's why I'm saying, like, to me, this is why Duet wins, because he's there is no mistaking it, at least for the majority of the episode.
Yeah.
We know that this guy is trying to be a very bad individual.
Right.
We know
that. As far
as
we're concerned, there's no redeeming qualities.
Right.
There's no gray zones. And then we find out, not only is there a gray zone, but he's actually kind of a good guy.
He's trying to do a very noble thing, if for all the wrong reasons, or right reasons, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
But again, that, I guess, even here, he's playing a character. So the character of Goldar Yil, if that was truly how that guy was, if he was that much of a villain, I would have loved to see that play out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, just give me more of that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you're totally right. If the character was like that in real life, if we could see more of him, like, you know, in bits even, like, you know, we have retroactive tapes of him talking, and Kira has to, like, I don't know, listen to them in one episode, and has to, like, you know, it's like people who are forensic detectives have, like, go through all the evidence.
They found some old security footage of him, like, you know, skinning the Bajoran alive or something, you know.
Terrible. Exactly, So,
obviously, as we've said, as you said a couple of times, we talked about through this episode was supposed to be a allegory for, like, the Holocaust and, the Holocaust and, like, the Japanese internment camps and things like that we saw throughout.
I'm sure there are a ton of analogies.
Yeah, true. But in the research that I did, those were the two that were mentioned as
kind of
their main ones. Yeah. But it said those two, but then it said, and other atrocities.
Right.
So, you know, our own history is obviously full of these, you know, things that happen.
Yeah.
And which, again, makes me wonder, going back to what we were talking about earlier, too, the aspect of propaganda and misinformation,
right?
So, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it. I guess there's no real way we could combat something like that except for having people like Maritza come forward and continue to tell their, you know, their story and things like that. We had the Nuremberg trials following World War II. You think that there was ever a time when we had a situation like that, that potentially there could have been a person who was claiming to be something they weren't in order to bring about a greater truth?
Are you thinking something
in particular? I'm totally speculating right now. I'm basing this off of what I can remember from history and just
is
whatever.
Is there something like the Nuremberg trials? I mean, I don't think I know of anything like the Nuremberg trials on that scale. In fact, I think the Nuremberg trials in a certain sense are kind of unique in history. Like, how often do war crimes get punished in some, you know, tribunal of some kind? Usually the winners just win and move on.
Yeah.
You know, there's not really much retrospective, you know, looking back on the history of the situation type thing. I would just imagine that's the once in a million opportunity. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I was just truly speculating. And then just, you know, we see also the representation here of Goldar Heel. You know, the Bajorans call him the Butcher of Galatep, whereas Gul Dukat's like, he was buried with honors. He died a hero, you know.
Right.
So again, two competing stories of the same man. And
yeah.
Right.
Or not an
allergy for them. Well,
the narrative.
And it's also something that we see a lot in Star Trek. Like, I can remember, too, in the TNG episode, The Drumhead. You know, and Picard talks about the dangers of, you know, kind of letting these people slip by, you know, or letting them infect us in a certain way, you know, with their...
Drumhead
is when there's suspicion that someone on the ship is a Romulan spy.
Right.
And it turns out that they find a guy who had Romulan ancestry.
Right.
And so they try to pin all the stuff on him.
Right.
And that Admiral Nora Satie comes on board.
Right.
And then she turns it into the Drumhead trial. It's like a witch hunt, basically.
Right.
And so they ruin that guy's career. And then she turns her sights on Picard and tries to take him down. And it doesn't work. And Picard ends the episode by basically lecturing Worf about the dangers of turning a blind eye to these types of people,
right.
You know, and that's what he says, the price we must pay, constant vigilance.
Right.
That's just something I've always kind of stood out to me too, is like in a broader sense, again, talking about misinformation, like,
right.
Do we not have a duty to make sure that we are accurately telling these stories, telling the truth about those situations?
Right.
You know, so that nothing, not necessarily so that nothing gets buried, but more so that things don't get confused and could potentially happen again.
Remind me, was Picard trying to say that constant vigilance is a good thing? That's how we prevent this bad stuff from happening? Or the danger is that we're always on our edge?
It's kind of, the way I always interpreted it, that it was kind of both. That it's like, it's necessary,
right.
But it's unfortunate that it's necessary.
It's
and that's what he was saying, it's the price that we must pay in order to live in a just and a just and civilized society that's the price. We must watch out for these individuals who would do this.
Right.
Who would whip us up and do it. We have to be accountable to ourselves and to others.
Right.
Because Worf is lamenting in this scene the fact that Admiral Satie was able to kind of twist his sense of justice and honor into driving him to these investigations, which ultimately led to the downfall of an innocent man.
Right.
So, yeah, and that's what Picard's like, yeah, that's our price. We have to watch out for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Remember that episode, not well enough for what happens to the character who was accused of everything. Does he
loses everything. He was just a crewman, so his career was over. He had nothing else. But then that was the thing, like, he was done. Like, that whole part was done.
Right.
And Judge Satie should have ended it, but she didn't. She kept going,
right.
And then she aimed her sights on Picard, and that's when everything fell apart, because she was like, well, she tried to take down Jean-Luc. That's just not going to happen,
exactly.
You know? We're not going to lose the greatest captain in Starfleet history, right?
Is that the same episode where it turns out there's another admiral? I'm trying to think this is wrong, but, you know, she's actually a Romulan?
No,
she's
not the same.
She's going to be a Vulcan ambassador. That's a different episode.
That's a different episode. Yes, but I remember that one too. Yeah, she's a Romulan who's dressed as a Vulcan, and she was an ambassador, and Data's the one who initially figures that out.
Right.
But it's too late.
Yeah, because like her, I don't know, transport ship gets blown up, and they think that the Romulans have committed an atrocity, and so the Romulans have to admit they did commit an atrocity because they actually didn't have a spy in them. Yeah, but that's a different episode.
Yeah.
The episode is done right.
Right. But yeah, and the reason why I guess I'm fixated on it now and thinking about this episode and remembering everything is because obviously we have a lot of that goes on right now. You know, there's a lot of misinformation about a lot of things that are out there. And so, I mean, obviously Star Trek is kind of, they try to be a lens for a lot of these things. And so what we get is sometimes a very simplistic view.
Right.
right? And I would just imagine that, I don't even have to imagine, like, just living it, it's hard to know who to listen to, right? Or where to look for your information. Because even if you think, I'm not going to listen to anybody, I'm going to do my own research, right, there are so many places you can pull research from.
Yeah.
And so where on the one hand, it's great that we have access to the technology that we can get these materials right away.
Right.
It's often bad because some people just don't know what to make of it.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, I see that.
And then everything out there, you know, you never know who's put their own spin on anything.
Yeah.
What is the total truth versus what is the truth according to,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
whomever that, you know, posted.
I always like to joke, you better have like a salt shaker next to your computer because you got to take a grain of salt with everything.
Right. Don't even have a salt shaker. Just take that top right off and just wait. It's coming.
Yeah.
We've dealt with a lot of this stuff throughout, you know, news cycles, political cycles, election cycles, all of it. Everybody has their own spin of things to help themselves either look better or make their opponent look worse.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there's anything that we can do to be vigilant, that we can make sure things like this don't happen or don't get buried or don't get confused.
Yeah.
You know.
I have no good answers there.
Well, and that's kind of like what, you know, I guess what I'm getting at with this episode and with multiple episodes in Star Trek. Like, they talk about it. They talk about the dangers of kind of, you know, letting these things either move past you or to let someone pull wool over your eyes, basically.
Right.
But there's never an answer. There's never a, instead, here's a tool you can use. Like, there's none of that for this. So, I guess, like, that's one of the few things that, should we appreciate that or not? That they don't give us an answer? Because when we don't have one, I guess we're always still grappling with it in some regard. But yeah, I guess I just would like for one time somebody to put their foot down and say, nope, this is how you do it. You know, but I'm sure that will never happen because that, again, would be inputting a bias as well. So
yeah.
But interesting that it is a recurring theme. Like I feel like every Trek has dealt with something like this along the way. Kind of how to move past your bias.
Yeah.
How to move past this negative propaganda you were fed at some point.
Well, that's certainly just on a general sense. That's what's behind every mystery novel. Every mystery story is the information in front of me true or not? How do I parse out the false from the true and the real and come to the facts? So it makes great storytelling, huh?
I'll have to keep that in mind. Yeah. You know, but
are all your characters and all your stories just truth tellers and therefore the stories are flat?
No. Honestly, I can say that most of mine are just as confused as I am.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe that's probably why I'm always like searching for someone to tell me what to do, because I'm just like, I don't know, and I've got 13 characters I wrote that don't know either. You know, so But all right, as we come up here on the end of our episode, I just want to once again remind everybody that you should go ahead and sign up for Paramount Plus, because pretty soon that's the only place you're going to be able to watch Star Trek. And also remind people that if anything that we said to you tonight didn't make any sense, it's probably because you didn't watch the episode. So go watch it. Pause this. Well, now we're at the end, so it's too late. You've already spoiled it for yourself. But you should still go back and watch it, because as I said, according to the internet, which, take it with a grain of salt, this is one of the top 10 most essential episodes of Trek to watch. So go watch it. You will enjoy it, we promise. Do you have anything before we close out?
Nah, just thanks again for listening, guys. Next episode is our, well, season one finale of,
that's right,
of Deep Space Nine. It won't be our finale, of course, but yeah.
That is right.
We're going to do a recap of season one and
No, hopefully I will have a little bit more information in regards to, I guess, our personal stuff, you know, how, since we'll be doing kind of a recap for us as well, you know, how the workouts and the new workout schedule and all that stuff is going for those that are interested. And then as we move into season two, we might be doing a couple of little special things to kind of expand our show a little bit. But other than that, no. So once again, thank you all for listening to Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast, which you can find anywhere you listen to podcasts, and we will catch you next week.